Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Let's go to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And we're going to look at just three verses here, verses 2, 3, and 4. And we're going to be talking about troublesome times in our lives as we look at these three verses. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Well, this is a passage about trials, and trials from James' perspective are the difficulties in life, but what's a little unusual is that we should find joy in trials. Consider it all joy, he says, when you encounter various trials. And I want to talk about what that means, but I don't think it means finding humor in suffering necessarily. It's not like the guy who was in the hospital. And he was in a coma, and he'd come out for a day, but then fall back in the coma. But his wife was there every day, you know, sitting up with him and staying through the night, watching over him. He came out of the coma, and in this moment of consciousness, he looked over and saw his wife sitting in the corner, and he motioned for her to come over close to the bed. And she brought her chair over and leaned down to hear what he had to say. And he said, "Honey, you were there when I got laid off, and we had such difficult times. And you were there when, you know, we started that business, and then the business went under. And you were there when, you know, we lost the house, and then you were there when I got this disease. You stuck with me. You were there when my health started failing. And you know what?" And she leaned down to hear what he's going to say. He said, "I think you're bad luck." Well, that's not the kind of joy that James is talking about that we should find in suffering. I want to define some terms here that, especially in verse 2, that help us to kind of see what's going on in this passage. The word "consider" here is from two Greek words that are put together, and they literally mean to lead the way or to go before. So what James is saying here, by using this terminology, he's saying that joy should lead the way in your response. It should go before your response to the troublesome times that you have. It's not that that's natural. That's not natural. It's not even easy. But it's a decision that you can make to have joy even in trials. The word joy is a common term in the New Testament. And when you think of joy, you think of, feeling a great pleasure and happiness. Joy, to me, is watching a John Wayne movie. You know what I mean?
Amen.
Or playing a round of golf. And I've been working on figuring out how to watch a John Wayne movie while playing golf. And day or day, I'm not saying the world's going to change. Well, that's, you got your own things that make you happy in life. But there are really two kinds of joy. There's the kind of joy that we have in this world, but there's also the joy that Jesus offers to us. In John chapter 15, in verse 11, Jesus said to the disciples, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full." So Jesus came to bring us a different kind of joy. He didn't come to bring us the worldly kind of joy. It was already here. We already experienced the kind of happiness of this realm. He came to bring us something different, and it's to be found in the things that he spoke. These words I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and your joy may be made full. So the joy of the world has to do with what makes the world happy. To experience the joy of the world is to look for happiness in the things of the world. And I don't know about you, but I paid attention to commercials and how the world appeals to you to be happy. Did you know you can't be happy unless you're wearing the right kind of designer jeans? You can't. Now, you can't be happy unless you have the right kind of automobile and all of those things. I remember back in the day that your marriage wouldn't survive unless you had the right kind of mouthwash. Do you remember, you know, the husband and wife wake up in the morning and, oh, you're 50 again, honey. And he runs to the bathroom and he gargles, but not with just any old mouthwash, because some mouthwashes give you medicine-y breath. I don't think the institution of marriage would have survived without fresh, minty soap. That's what makes you happy. Things. It's interesting that our world is filled with gloom and despair and discouragement and pessimism. In spite of all the things that we pursue. I think it's because people lose things or they can't reach out and get the things that are held out like a carrot stick for us. And so they're robbed of their happiness because their joy is wrapped up in stuff, in things. And when your stuff is taken from you, your joy will be taken from you as well. James is not talking about that kind of worldly joy. Jesus came to offer us genuine happiness and a kind of joy that you can't find just living in the world here. This joy comes not from anything the world can offer to us, but from everything that God offers to us. And so Jesus knows genuine happiness, genuine joy, and he came and he spoke to us about that so that his joy might be in us. Now remember this statement I'm going to make. It's the future of the Christian that dispels the gloom of the moment. The future of the Christian dispels the gloom of the moment. Paul said to the Romans in Romans 8, verse 18, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that's to be revealed to us. In other words, you could never rob him of his joy in living the Christian life. He would never compromise, no matter how much suffering you might heap upon him, because his sights were set on a greater joy and a greater glory in heaven. And so when we understand the words of Jesus and we bring those into our lives, we understand what he offers us, we'll have the kind of joy that he had. Joy is a disposition within a man. It fills the whole man and sets the mood of a man from the inside rather than from the outside. The joy of the Christian is not contained in what he has in worldly goods, but what he has in heavenly goods. He's listened to the words of Jesus. He wants the life that Jesus offers him for eternity. We just sang a song that talked about love for eternity. Amazing thing. Did you know that we are now living the eternal life, the abundant life? We already have it. It started. We only have a taste of it. But it tastes really good. It happens when we come together as brothers and sisters. when you're here, there's no crime. When you're here, the person next to you is not going to lie to you. They're going to be concerned about you and your welfare. When you're here, you're talking about positive things. You love one another. Wouldn't it be great if everyone loved everyone else?
Yep, amen.
Like we do in the church. That's heaven. That's what it's going to be like. There's no good crap in heaven. There's no troublemakers in heaven. No sorrow, no crying, no suffering, no pain. We're tasting it now. And it tastes so good, we sing about it, it's going to be for eternity. Well, Jesus has that kind of joy that James is talking about and offers it to us. Well, let's define the word trials. The word trials is a Greek term, periosmos, there'll be a test, so be sure to write that down, that can be translated into English as either trial or temptation. If you read on in James chapter 1 in verses 13 and 14, he talks about temptations. It's the verbal form of this word. It's the same Greek word. But the context determines what he's talking about. A temptation is a solicitation to sin. It's an invitation to do something that's wrong. It's bait that Satan puts out for us to accept and for us to be captured by him. He's hoping we'll take a bite and sin against God. But a trial is really a test. It's a test of genuineness. And it proves something about you. You know, before our Olympians go to the Olympics, they first have to go through the Olympic trials. And they are aware of that because at the Olympic trials, that's who we determined is genuine enough and capable enough to compete in the Olympics. So that's the concept of this word of trials. James is speaking of adverse circumstances. He's saying that these become tests for our faith, and they determine if our faith is genuine. But since the same Greek word is translated as either temptation or trial, then you can see the possibility of both of those concepts in the very same event in your life. Now you think about that. It could either be a trial or it could be a temptation. Whatever event that confronts you, it depends on your response to it. When something bad happens to you in life, it could be viewed as God testing your faith, or it could be viewed as Satan tempting you to sin. Now, how is that possible? The same event could be either a temptation or a trial. Well, let's go back to Job. You remember Job? Job was the richest man in the East. And he had a big family, 7 sons, 3 daughters, good family. They're all grown, have homes of their own. But he was rich. How rich was he? He had 7,000 sheep. Can you imagine that? Even by today's standards, that's a flock. That's a huge, huge flock. So he had 7,000 sheep. He had 3,000 camels. What does a man want with 3,000 camels? They were transportation. I think Job must have opened the very first used camel lot before King Arthur had his camel lot. He had also 500 yoke of oxen. He had 500 female donkeys, and the Bible says he had very many servants. This guy was the Elon Musk of the ancient times. One day, Satan reports to God. You know, Satan is under God. God is more powerful. God lets Satan do the things that he does. He comes and reports to God, "Where have you been? All I've been roaming about, causing trouble on earth. Have you considered my servant Job?" God's bragging on this servant. He's faithful. Satan says, he only serves you because of all the stuff you gave him. You take all that stuff away, he'll turn his back on you. So God gives him a free hand with Job. I'm just can't tell. It's amazing what Job endures. His family is wiped out. All those sons and daughters that he loved. And all of his possessions, every bit of it, are ruined by Satan. And then finally he comes to the man Job himself, and Satan inflicts the greatest suffering he can think of. The poor man is so infected with these boils and sores, and he can't scratch, and he, the ceiling mattress company had not been invented yet, and he had no place to lay down to get comfortable, and so he used ashes. Can you imagine that? To find comfort. The man is suffering. But what's going on here? In all of those events, Satan is soliciting Job to sin. He wants him to curse God. But in those same events, God is testing the quality, the genuineness of Job's faith. So it depends on how you respond, but in the same events that come to you, the difficult times in your life, it's either a trial or a temptation. And James is talking about God testing your faith. Now, it uses the word encounter. Consider it joy when you encounter various trials. That word encounter is a Greek term that means to fall or to fall on. And it means that something comes along and falls in on you or falls upon you or you fall into it. It's not something you go looking for. It's something that comes looking for you. And so it falls in on you. And James is saying that in your discipleship, in your Christian pilgrimage, you're going to bump into these trials. There will be hard times. There will be suffering along the road to heaven. And then he calls them, they are various. There are various trials. And this is a term that means multicolored. And so trials come to us in a variety of colors. Sometimes they're black. They can be as black as the day when your loved one dies. I've been there. I've seen the buttons of that car. They can be as rosy as having financial prosperity. Or they can be as bleak and dingy gray as when life sours on you in water perfection. But they come to us as various colors, and they fall on us. So James says, consider it joy when you encounter various trials. Now, I think the next two verses indicate why we can consider that joy. And I'm going to give you 3 points here that I think James makes. Number one is, you can consider trials joy because you recognize it is a testing of your faith. Now, tests should be viewed as a good thing, not a bad thing, because tests prove what's significant about you. And that's why Olympians look forward to Olympic trials. It's a test. They don't shy away from them. They're anxious to go to the Olympic trials because they want their skills to be proved genuine. Because that's what gets you to the big game, the Olympics themselves. So they welcome these trials because it proves something about them. Well, the same thing is true about testing of the faith of a Christian. Did you know that God is looking for a certain kind of individual to occupy his heavenly home for eternity? If he wanted just any old human being, He would have put us in heaven from the very beginning, didn't he? Wouldn't he, or could he? He would have. But he's wanting us to develop. He's wanting us to become something, to reflect something about him. And so trials help us to prove to God that we are genuine. He puts us through tests to determine what we're made of. He tested Job, didn't he? He tested Abraham. So we should also expect to receive tests in our life. And when you see it as a test, you can consider it as an occasion of joy. When we sign on as Christians, we're sort of signing on saying we want to go to the heavenly Olympics, just like our earthly Olympians. And so we're wanting to be proven to be genuine. And so we welcome the occasions where God can prove the genuineness of our faith by testing our faith. I'm going to turn over to Acts chapter 9 very briefly to show you something from the Apostle Paul. His life as it began as a Christian. You remember he had this vision on the road to Damascus. He saw the Lord. He was, you know, he's trying to destroy the church. Now he is about to turn completely around. And he's blinded on that occasion. So the Lord appears to Ananias and tells Ananias to go and talk to this man whose name was Saul. Present the gospel to him. Ananias said, Lord, I've heard from many about this man. How much harm he did to your saints in Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who call upon your name. But the Lord said, go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles, that's the world, and kings and the sons of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my sake. And so the Lord is convincing Ananias to go and teach this man and baptize him. And he, of course, becomes God's greatest servant, perhaps, that did more for the kingdom than he ever did in trying to destroy the church. But he said to Ananias, the Lord did, that he's going to appear before kings. And so it's sort of like the Olympics. But first, he said, I'm going to show him what he's got to suffer. Our Olympians, well, they appear before presidents and heads of states and kings when they're actually engaged in their Olympic activity. That's where Paul was headed. But they first go through the trials to get there. And that's what Paul had to do. Go through the suffering in order to be the kind of man that God wanted him to be. You know, the whole world knows about the faith of Paul because we've seen him, how he performed under suffering. Do you think you could ever convince this man to give up, to quit, to stop preaching? On one of his missionary journeys, they took him outside of this town and they stoned him and they thought he was dead. He was a bloody heap. Guess where he was the next morning? Back in town preaching. You couldn't stop this guy. All of those trials were a test. God knows he is a genuine man. So you and I need suffering to prove who we really are if we're going to go on to win the crown of life. You remember Paul said at the end of his life, I have finished the course. That's Olympian kind of language. I've finished running my course. Now he stands on the podium brandishing a gold medal and what he calls the crown of life. That's what we're after. Just the trials for an Olympian is something. You've made it. If you get to the trials, that's pretty good. But what if you can get through the trials, be proven to be genuine, and go to the Olympics? That's what we're after as Christians. So you can remember in all of your suffering, God is testing my faith. That's a good thing. And I can rejoice. Secondly, in verse 3, trials produce endurance. The word endurance comes from a Greek term that's a combination, again, of two Greek terms that mean remain and under, to remain under. And it carries the idea of being under pressure, especially in the tough times of life, but instead of exploding or giving up, you remain there. You remain steady. And so sometimes we translate this word steadfastness. Sometimes we translate it perseverance. Sometimes endurance. And sometimes by the word patience. But whatever English word we use, it all means the same thing. There's something produced within us, something accomplished within us by trials. It's something that we desperately need. And it's because of the way Christianity is laid out. God is the one who puts our faith to the test. So he's training us. He's trying to make us stronger. And trials are given for that purpose, to make you resilient, to make you stronger in your faith and in your relationship with God. One man said, you know, I pray for patience, but all I get is trouble. Well, that's right, because the endurance, the patience, comes through trouble in your life. That's the way it comes. My mother used to say to me when I was a kid, son, you're trying my patience. I didn't know I was doing the Lord's work. I'm trying to make her stronger. But that's the way we get endurance. And you have to have endurance for the long haul, or you're not going to make it. No Olympian can throw up his hands and just give up and expect to win the prize. So God sends us difficulty in order to produce endurance. And your faith needs endurance. So you may get a naughty child. You may have a demanding boss. You may have an exasperating co-worker. But consider that an occasion of joy. God is trying to produce endurance within you. Patience. Perseverance. The question is, how are you going to respond to all of that? All of those troublesome things that we encounter in life. Will we just give up and explode in anger, or will we remain under and steadfast? I think we should see the difficult times as something essential for us to get to our heavenly home. Endurance is a new facet of Christian character that is absolutely essential. It has to be added to our Christian character. And it's produced within us only by means of trials. I was amazed at the Olympian marathoners. Year after year, that's my favorite event in the Olympics. They can run over 26 miles in about 2 hours. Can you imagine that? That amazes me. But you know, not everyone makes it. Some of them don't have the endurance to cross the finish line. As Christians, our race is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And we have to have endurance. Trials help us to grow, to build that endurance. So you can consider it joy when you understand that all of the suffering you endure in life is there for your benefit to bring this endurance that you desperately need. Well, here's the third reason why you can consider joy. And James says here in verse 4, it makes you complete. It's interesting that James leaves this verse with an imperative. He says, let it have its perfect result. Let it have its perfect result. The actual reading in verse 4 is, let endurance have its perfect result. An imperative in the Greek is like a command. This has got to happen. You've got to do this. Endurance has to have its perfect result. Perfect does not mean without flaw. Perfect is a word that means that something is brought to its ultimate end or conclusion or goal. You know, when you build something with your hands, you step back and say, perfect. It's complete. And that's the idea in this word. It's not that it's not flawless, but it is complete. And so James is saying here that we need to move forward to become mature in our faith, to become perfect or complete. That's the aim that God is looking for. Then he uses three expressions that are similar in meaning to show us the intended goal, in order that, he says, that you may be perfect, complete, lacking in nothing. So you have reached your goal, is the idea of perfect there. You want to be mature. You want to be complete. That means you have everything that's needed. And so once you add endurance, you're moving to where everything that is needed for you to be perfect, reaching your goal. Lacking in nothing, he says. That means all the features are there, nothing is missing. So James is talking about the ultimate goal of Christians living in this world. He's talking about us maturing spiritually. Without endurance, without perseverance, something is missing. You're not complete. You cannot reach spiritual maturity. James is saying here in verse 4, we have to allow endurance to work itself out to its intended goal. It's proving or it's providing something that we desperately need in order to cross the finish line. And so you can consider it joy when you understand that it's moving you towards maturity. People who give up the race before finishing, well, they're not very mature Christians, are they? And I know that in your congregation, you've seen people drop out. They're no longer running alongside of you. They just didn't have the endurance. They let the sufferings or the problems of this life become impatience. And they turn their back on God. They didn't see them as tests to make them stronger, and so they just gave up. When I was in high school football, we had my coach put this famous saying over the doorway of the locker room, and we'd see it every time that we'd go out of the locker room. A lot of times we'd reach up and slap it. It said, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And we bought into that. And we believed that. And sometimes we have to come from behind to win a game. But we never quit. And we fought on. In the same way, if you want to be a genuine Christian, you've got to be tough. You can't give up. Life isn't easy. Toughness is a sign of Christian maturity. You've endured. You're going to finish the race. Spiritual completeness or spiritual maturity is what God is looking for in his people. Anyone can give up when the going gets tough. It's easy to throw in the towel, isn't it? Just to leave all of the stress and the concerns behind, all the trouble. But people like that consider trials not as an occasion of joy. They don't understand what it brings to their life. And so they give up. Now, that's what James is talking about. So the next time you have difficulties in life, remember, I've got to consider this an occasion of joy. because of what James said and the way that God told me that. And so if I come complaining to you about the difficult circumstances in my life, you can put your arm around me and respond by saying, "Whoa, man, guy, you really got it tough. Let's rejoice." That's why I punch your life out. Well, that's John Wayne talking. That's the immature response, isn't it? You would do me a favor to remind me this is an occasion of joy, Orbison. That's because trials, they test the genuineness of the faith. Trials, they produce endurance that you desperately need. Trials, they make you spiritually complete, lacking in nothing. So when you're confronted by trouble in life, think joy, not defeat. Oh, but Brother Orbison, you don't understand. What if I lose my joy, my job? And what then? And James would say to you, joy, rejoice. God is testing your faith. God is producing endurance within you. God is bringing you to a level of spiritual maturity. Oh, but you don't understand. What if I lose my house? What then? Joy. What if I smash up my car? Joy. What if I lose all of my money in the bank? Joy. Well, what? If, joy. What? Joy. Joy. When you see the reality of what's happening in that occasion, you cannot respond with anything less than the joy that Jesus came to bring us. These words I have spoken to you, Jesus said, that my joy may be in you, and your joy may be made whole. It's the way you respond to troublesome times that determines whether this has become a trial for you, a test, or whether it's become a temptation. A brother quits coming to church and an elder goes to visit with him. Why haven't you been in church the last couple of weeks? Well, 3 weeks ago, old sister so-and-so said such and such to me. It really offended me. I'll never darken the door of that church building again. Say, why? You give up the race for that?
Really?
Can you imagine that? But I've heard that with my people. These are people who are not mature. These are people whose eyes are fixed not on the things of God, but the things of this realm. So they're not seeing the reality. They don't understand the purpose of suffering. James helped us, and if only they could have seen the trials are there, and they come to us in various colors, and what it produces for us, they would have never given up. When the going gets tough, the tough get it away. Thank you for your attention.